We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, folks, good morning. Welcome to a hot, fresh episode of Taking It Outdoors. This one's right out of the oven. Look outside. We finally have some ice fishing weather, and today we're going to work it into the conversation. Let's start by saying good morning to our old pal Mark Hertline. You remember Mark. He's a fishing instructor locally, regionally, across the state. Mark's also a tournament angler and a pro staffer for many great brands like Power Pro, hello, Shimano, G. Loomis, Costa, Del Mar Sunglasses, and many more. Mark, how you been? You been out on the hard water yet?
Actually, I haven't been because I've been in Niagara Falls all last week.
Good for you. The big fishing show out there. Did you run into any celebrity anglers this year?
A couple of them. Mark Menendez being the most famous one.
Nice. Did he ask about me?
Actually, he did.
Yeah, right. Get out of here. Any cool products you want to tell me about? That's one cool thing about going to these shows, especially Mark being an insider, an industry insider. What's going to be on the store shelves soon?
Well, it's not a new product, but I kind of discovered the steel shad lure, which is a bladed bait lure.
And like a vibrating?
Yep. And the company was actually there, and I actually bought some beforehand. Before I got to meet the owners and stuff, and I'm going to try them through the ice. And they were also informing how well they work, too, on the smallmouth. So Oneida Lake will be a...
You know those little heading sonars?
Yeah.
Is it similar to
same
that?
Same basic principle.
I know guys that catch salmon and trout off those things.
They catch everything.
I'll be dang. And they're making a comeback, huh?
I guess so, yeah. The bait looks good. I bought a couple different sizes and
never
gonna try them out.
Never fished one of those. You just work it like a rattle trap or another vibrating?
Yeah, you can work it like a rattle trap or I'll vertical jig it when I'm ice fishing.
Mark, I want to get right into it today. I want you to answer a question that has stumped me. It may be a dumb question, but consider the source here. As anglers in fishing, a good rule of thumb, match the hatch. You know, whenever we present a bait to a fish in hopes of hooking it, we're trying to represent something that they would normally eat.
Mm-hmm.
All right? We're trying to trick them. So when we're ice fishing and I have a little teardrop jig or I have a Swedish pimple or some other vertical jigging a piece of tackle there, what are we doing by putting the worms on the end? What is that? What hatch are we matching when we do that?
I don't know. During the ice fishing season, you're actually matching the hatch because there is none.
Well,
basically flathead minnows. Now, if you're going to fish for perch, you use flathead minnows, Niagaras. They're 2 inches long. If you're going to go for pike, you'll go up to the bigger pike. I mean, 5-6 inches can be.
I understand that because that pike and they eat minnows
right
day to day. But they don't eat worms. They don't eat caterpillar larvae.
No, and you're saying worms. When we were talking worms, are you talking mousies?
Yeah, I'm talking mousies, waxworms, spikes,
yeah, little
maggots,
grubs.
Whatever.
A lot of them I use for the panfish, sunnies, bluegills, and then perch. Because they're still feeding on them smaller organisms.
All right. I was just curious, man, because I was out the other day and I was sitting there doing that. And I was like, all right, now I know when I put a crawfish on the end of a jigging pig, what I'm trying to recreate down there. And I just thought, what am I trying to trick this fish into by sticking this little maggot on the end of this on the end of this jig head here?
That's a good question. But
that's what they are, right?
Yeah, they're like maggots.
Spikes are maggots.
Mousies are maggots with a tail.
And waxworms are the wax moth. It's a centipede or caterpillar, rather.
But remember, the panfish and the perch feed on larva a lot. So they see it all the time. Now,
not in 20 foot of water.
Well, in the summer they might.
Okay.
But think about it like this. If you're walking down the street right now, it's what? Well, right now, but it's going to be 10 degrees out soon.
Sure.
There's a banana split sitting in the middle of the road, even though it's 10 degrees out.
I'll
still
going
to eat it.
Yeah, I'm mad they closed the Abbots up by the lake seasonally. I understand that.
You know, I try to, if I'm perch fishing, I'll bring spikes if they're not hitting the bait. And I usually tip my Swedish pimples and all my other jigs with a minnow or of the minnow head at least.
All right. Yeah, I mean, like I said, overwhelmingly, I'll use perch minnows, pike minnows, whether they're Niagaras, fatheads, I don't really care. Whatever they got, I'll buy. You know, that's kind of dictated by the bait shop you go to. But yeah, like I said, I was just curious because I was like, is it putting off a scent? What's it doing there? And I was like, yeah, all of it.
Live bait is great. And if you can mix it with an attractant, like on a jigging spoon that's flashing, you're going to draw it to it.
Another dumb question I wanted to ask you, and this is wildly selfish, and I don't know if it will do anybody else any good or not, but remember my old aluminum boat I had, that old Tracker that I started on? I had a Lowrance unit on there. It was a little 4-inch screen, had a down scanner on it, you know, just showed me grass, give me a couple fish arcs here and there, the bottom temperature, and you know, it was pretty basic setup. If I rig that to a battery and just drop the transducer down a hole, would that work?
Sure.
Do guys do that, or am I the first one to think of it?
I'm sure you're not the first one to think of it.
I'm not. I saw a guy post it on Facebook, and I was like, man, I could make that just with what's in my garage.
Yeah, it'll work. Why wouldn't it? It's still in the water.
Because I still, for the life of me, I know 2 weeks ago you were in here with Mike Rogers from Ice Masters Elite, and you guys tried to explain to me the concept behind those Vexilars, and I don't know why I just can't get it, man. It's like I'm trying to do something left-handed. Is it a sonar? Is that what's going on there?
Yeah, it's bouncing off the bottom and reading what's in between the bottom. You know, it'll read the bottom as a hard line, and then it'll read the middle as your bait going down.
So
it'll pick that up.
It's only reading like a tube, like straight down.
Yeah, but the higher you are up, the cone might be bigger. So if you're in 20 feet of water, the cone's going to be bigger than if you're in 10.
Would it be advantageous to swing it back and forth?
No.
Oh.
Because you're not going to swing your bait back and forth.
Well, I was just seeing if you could cover more ground with it. But I guess it doesn't matter.
You're not moving your bait over to
you
it.
You can't present a bait over there.
And what are you going to swing it? 3 feet, if that, on either side?
You ever use soft plastics, or is it just...
Not too much when I'm ice fishing, but a lot of guys do.
Yeah.
You can throw down a Bass Assassin on a little tiny jig, just like we do for the perch on Canandaigua.
You ever use those Mackie plastics? You ever met Scott Brower, the guy that makes them? He's pretty big time. I say big time. He's a big name in regionally in ice fishing. Good dude. MackiePlastics.com is his website. And basically, I mean, he makes everything you can think of. It's real cool, and they're super tiny to whatever you're looking for. I would encourage people to check that out. I've had him in here a couple of times. I wanted to circle back to something we touched on a couple of weeks ago when you were in here, and we kind of ran out of time. You were telling me about getting into some walleye on Oneida. So I wanted to start there in the next segment. We're going to get to some other ice fishing conversations. And I don't know about you, Mark, but I want to budget some time because right now in my living room sits probably 30 rod and reel combos and about 24 Plano boxes. I'm already getting ready for spring fishing. It's something to do while I'm watching TV while all this snow's flying.
It's a good time to do it.
And I'm not sitting on the lake. So we'll begin with that in the next segment. This is Taking It Outdoors on 92.5 WBEE. Hey there, welcome back to Taking It Outdoors. I'm joined in studio this morning by a fishing instructor. Mark teaches fishing locally, regionally, across the state. Mark Hertline is his name. He's a tournament angler and pro staffer for great brands like Shimano, G. Loomis, Power Pro, Costa Sunglasses, Mr. Twister. I could keep going. We're talking ice fishing today. We finally got some good hard water. I know when I'm going about my business, the north end of Canisius Lake is just peppered with guys. I had something that took me down on East Lake Road in Honeyoy as I was going down there. That lake's peppered. I haven't heard too much about the bays, If they're frozen up, I know Braddock's and the ponds up in Greece, guys have been on that forever, but I know guys that'll get out on Braddock's or the ponds up there when there's an inch of ice.
Yeah, because you fall through, you're only in 3 feet of water.
You're good. If you fall through, you just walk to shore.
Yeah, they've been on SOTUS all the way out. Yeah, all the way out to the islands. I've seen pictures.
Perch bite's been good?
From what the guys were showing me, it's been kind of on and off. Some had good. I guess it depends where you are.
Yep. Well, Mark, I mentioned it at the end of the last segment. You know, rarely we talk about catching the walleye. I've never caught one. I know guys that are just fantastic at it. I don't know how they learned how to do it. I lived on Canisius Lake for 5.5 years, and I never even accidentally caught one. But you said you get them through the ice in Oneida.
Yeah, we get them really good sometimes.
All right, tell me about that. That's got to be a riot. Let's start with what kind of rod and reel. Like, what's your tackle situation here?
6-pound, 4-pound test. If I'm running the lipless crankbaits, like the red-eyed shad quarter, I might be using 6-pound.
Okay.
And then the rip wraps, the Rapala, you know, with the hook on the front and the back, is another good bait.
Those are the ones that swing back and forth?
Yeah.
As you jig them?
And then the Ultralight rip and wrap, Rapala.
All right.
They're also the other crankbait I use, because you can get them in smaller sizes, too, the lipless.
And you're just jigging that?
Yeah.
At various portions of the water column?
Yeah, I usually was out. Last time we were out, we were at about 30 feet, 28 feet. I mean, it only gets 30 feet. So we were out in about 28, and we weren't fishing rock structure. We were fishing mud because the worms were in it.
Be honest with me. Were you targeting walleye, or did you just happen upon them?
Well, we want the perch, then we want the walleye. So we target them. I've gone out there and not caught one all day. Then at the end of the day, you can't keep them off the hook.
But typically the same fishy situation that will hold the walleye will hold perch and
the bigger perch.
All right, keep going.
You know, we mix the bag. And the cool thing about Oneida is sometimes you hook into a burbot. And they're phenomenal, and they're big. I've seen where we can't get them through the hole. So
what's the fight like? Describe it to me. Like,
on a walleye?
Is it more smallmouthy, or is it catfishy? It goes to the bottom?
It shakes its head, it seems more. The weight is obvious from when you're catching perch and you go to a walleye. And you're using such light tackle. Now, you can go to a little bit stiffer rod, a medium rod. If I'm fishing panfish, I'm using more of an ultralight rod than I am when I'm jigging walleyes. And when I'm jigging walleyes, I'm sometimes standing up and moving that jig a foot and just kind of like popping it.
So you have an ultralight rod, not an ice fishing combo.
Oh, no, they're all ice fishing combos, but you can get them in all different.
I'm tracking you. I understand what you're saying there.
Shimano came out with Convergence rods, and you can get 4 different sizes on them.
Now, in the years that Lake Erie will freeze, do you know guys that ever effort them there?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, that just sounds like so much fun, man.
I've never been out there. But a couple of the guys at the show, we were talking about it. You got to be careful with that ice, though, on those big lakes.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I wouldn't want to go, but I'm just thinking, well, I know it freezes, and even if you can't go way out there, I'm sure, like in the shallow portions,
right,
small
inside
boat
the
harbor
wall
and
stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure you could get out there, and I'm just thinking you get one of those 4.5-5-pound smallmouth on an ice.
Oh, all hell breaks loose.
That would just
you get them in
Sortis
Bay, and it does. Yeah. The largemouth, not so much. Now, I got a friend who goes to the Thousand Islands, and he showed me pictures where he's fishing the river, and 100 yards out there is a tanker going by.
I was watching this YouTube video earlier this week. It was an old guy up in, I don't know, up the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Just an old guy who makes YouTube videos. And he was, you know, we spend so much time and effort trying to avoid line twist as anglers.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was saying, if they're not biting, he'll just sit there and twist that line in his hand like one way and then let it go and let it spin the
around.
Other way around. You ever heard of guys doing that?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's this old bird, and I've been watching his fishing videos for a while, And he talked about doing that. He's also big into chumming. And as much as I've been ice fishing around here, I've never gone with anybody that'll chum the waters, whether it's mashing up minnows or, you know.
We've chummed for catfish. Other than that, I've never chummed up here.
Yeah. And his philosophy is, you know, it gets, not only are you attracting fish, but you're attracting feeding aggressive fish.
Right.
And even those that aren't, if they're in the area and they see the feeders, they're going to turn
it on
as well.
Hmm.
And I don't know. I was just like, well, that sounds cool. Sounds expensive, too, just dumping my
bait.
Yeah,
dumping your bait down. And does he grind it up?
The minnows, he just puts them in his hand and just kind of mashes them around and just breaks it up. And he says it gets that oil loose and it gets in the water and it just creates a frenzy. I mean, I didn't get the impression he does it every time. It's more of a, hey, when you're not getting a bite, you may want to try this. You know, talk more about the horizontal jigging. You mentioned one a little earlier with the Rapalas, with the ones with the hook in the front and the back.
Depending on how I'm jigging, if I'm not getting a fish and I'm just moving it slow and I'm not catching anything, I might pop it a little bit more. It all depends what the fish are telling me they want. I've sat there and jigged and jigged and got nothing at all. And then I set the rod down and go to another rod, and then that rod goes off that was basically dead stick and just sitting there. So you got to pay attention to what the fish want. So I kind of let them tell me. If I'm being really aggressive with my jig and I'm walleye and they're hitting it, I'm going to keep doing it.
You ever use these cameras, the underwater cameras? We've talked a lot about electronics and sonar and the different options you have there. But I've been out with a buddy of mine, and he's got a camera, and it's cool. It's fun. You sit there, and you're watching it on a little 5-inch screen. Perch, or a little bass takes your jig. You set the hook. You rip its lips straight up, and it's fun. But are those more of a toy or a tool?
They can be both. I have an AquaView, and if you're going out with kids, you bring it because they love it. When we were at Oneida, we couldn't understand why we were catching this perch in the walleye. And I dropped the camera down there, and I could see there was thin weed down there and mud everywhere. And we didn't move because we were catching the fish there. And then I talked to another guy that I know that lives up there. I go, why are we catching these fish in here? We're in the mud, no rock structure or anything. He says, there's actually worms in that mud that the smaller fish feed on, and then that brings the bigger fish in. That's why you catch them there. So when I dropped the camera down, then I could see what I was fishing and why. So it does help. It's fun. But, you know, I look at, I walk, I don't, you know, I pull my sled out. That camera probably weighs another 8 pounds. Which doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're walking out on Oneida 2 miles, you want to kind of be as light as you can.
You don't use a sled or anything? You're like a pack mule? You just load up and hook
I drag my sled behind me, but I just march right out there.
Good stuff, Mark. I want to continue the conversation and kind of shift gears. I know we have a lot of bass anglers in the area that are sitting around waiting for this ice to go away so we can get back out on the water. And this is a great time to do your preparation. So when the weather does break, all you got to do is charge your batteries and go fishing. But I ran into a couple of problems as I've begun my early prep, and I wanted to run them up your flagpole over there, Mark. So sit tight. We'll be right back here at Taking It Outdoors on 92.5 WBEE. Hey, gang, good morning. Welcome back to Taking It Outdoors. I need to begin this segment with a little bit of an apology. I don't know what I was talking about with that flagpole analogy to end the last segment. I wanted to edit it out, but Mark wouldn't let me. He said, take your lumps, leave it in there, you moron. He might not have added the moron, but I felt it. Mark Hertline is our guest this morning. Mark is a fishing instructor. He works here locally, regionally, across the state. He's a tournament angler as well. Knows his stuff. Therefore, he's a pro staffer for great brands like Shimano, G. Loomis, Power Pro, and many more. I mentioned earlier, Mark, right now in my living room, I probably have between 27 and 32 rod and reel combos and 24 minimum Plano boxes, you know, that I keep my boat in for my terminal tackle and my soft plastics, my jigs, my crankbaits. It's all in the living room right now. And I do this every year. I don't know why. I think it's fun. I live alone, so I can kind of spread out and be messy. I don't have anybody on my back to to get my crap out of the living room.
Well, you don't live alone, and I wouldn't leave your hooks laying out.
No, that is a good point. That is a good point, man. I do have to take the jerk baits, the crank baits, because they start sniffing around, and I'm afraid one of those treble hooks is going to lay into one of those wet noses. So I am mindful of that. That's a very good point. And you haven't even met the new addition to my house.
No, I haven't.
Little Josie, who's 13 weeks old right now. But one thing I run across, Mark, and I don't know if this is a good thing, a bad thing. I spend a lot of money on hunting and fishing, so I try to not spend at every opportunity I can. Is it a good idea to... Okay, how often should I entirely change the line on my reels?
It depends what kind of line it is.
Monofilament.
Monofilament.
It's cheap. Just get new one, right?
Yes. But if you're not fishing every week, like when I was tournament fishing heavy, I was changing it every two tournaments.
Well, you're also using it, nicking it up.
Yes. But the average person, you know, isn't going to be doing that. I change it every year.
Okay. With monofilament, you know what I do? Just because I know I beat the heck out of it, I reverse it. Is that a bad idea? Like, I'll just reel it onto another reel, so what was the end is now the base?
Now, here's...
And what was the base is now the end.
This is a secret that a lot of companies don't want. You know, I do that with braid. I reverse it, because you never get down to that bottom part, especially if you're flipping. With the mono, if you're not ever getting down there that far, then why not?
Mark, I got braid that's probably 4 years old on some of my rods, because whenever I started tying braid to fluorocarbon leader on all my spinning combos, overwhelmingly for my drop shots, my shaky heads, you know, whatever, my Ned rigs, you know, since I'm tying leaders on it, I'll just cut 3 or 4 feet off, because I rarely send that braid too far past. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not like I'm... So I know it's older than dirt. It stinks. It's mildewed looking. I think it was moss green at first. Now it's a nice smoke. But it works.
Yeah. I'll keep mine on. Like, I won't take mine off this winter. I'll leave it on for the beginning of the season. And then when tournaments start, I'll switch it over. Yeah. But you can get away with...
What about your fluorocarbon? I would imagine that's it's a little more fragile than the other ones.
Yeah, it's a stiffer line.
It doesn't really nick. It'll kind of splinter apart. And I do know that, you know, when it heats up and cools off so many times from being on the deck of your boat, in the rod locker, in the back of your truck, in the sun, in the shade, in the rain, fluorocarbon, to my knowledge, can get weathered. Do you find that?
I take off my fluorocarbon. And I actually take off my mono, too. But it depends where you are. You know, I don't pay what, you know, the average consumer pays for line, to be totally honest.
Yeah, I hear you, Power
Pro. I can switch mine whenever I feel like it. You know, but that's not feasible for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, braid's most expensive. A good braid.
Yeah, good braid's expensive.
Is expensive.
And you can get two seasons out of your braid.
And cheap fluorocarbon's still expensive compared.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can get, Vanish. Who makes Vanish? Berkeley?
Yeah, sure.
That's, I'm sorry. I'm going against Mark's sworn brand loyalties over here.
Well, I'm not with Seaguar. They make great fluorocarbon.
Yeah. I use that stuff, but it's also
expensive.
It's also at Walmart now, though.
Oh.
They sell the red box.
Oh, do
Seaguar.
They?
Yeah. It's not the high end, but, you know, I still feel confident that I'm using the good brand, just the lower end of the spectrum there. Dumb question here. When you're at the tackle shop, whether it's B&E or, heck, even a big box store, when you go to the area where they'll load your reels up with line, they have that big box where they keep, where they throw.
The scrap.
Yeah. What do they do with that?
That goes to a company. They melt it down. They make blocks out of it. And they toss it in the water.
For what?
Reef.
Are you messing with me?
No, I'm serious. I believe that's what they use it for.
And people will pay for that?
No, they do it. An environmental thing does it.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, I always thought Cleveland, when they knocked down Cleveland Stadium, they dumped it in Lake Erie. We should have dumped Silver Stadium in the Lake Ontario. I'm not kidding.
There's too many bodies in that rubble over there.
But, you know, we could have had some man-made structure out here more.
Right. What kind of real maintenance do you do year to year?
I always take, well, for the most part, I take my line off. I use a Q-tip, and then I go around the bale.
Right.
And I check that, make sure there's nothing catching. I will take the, you know, those acne pads, those oxy things?
Yeah.
I buy them, and I wipe down everything with them. They work great. There's just alcohol on them. And then I'll pop off the covers, and I'll grease them. And then I take off the spools. Always back off your drag, too, on a reel that's sitting there. You don't want your drag tight all winter sitting on your spool.
Why is that?
I think it compresses it. And then when you go fishing the next time,
it might slip. Yeah.
I think that it's really good for the reel to back it off and let it sit there free.
What about your crankbaits? I'm so anal, Mark. I will take every crankbait out. I'll look at every hook. And I started saving a lot of money when I just started buying new hooks.
I've already started that. You go through and you check if I have any rust or any hook that's not what I think is sharp. Off it comes and I put a new one on.
Yeah, it's hard too because I'm always scared when I go replacing treble hooks on hard baits that it may not be the right size and it may affect the presentation of it. But overwhelmingly, there's some uniformity to them. You can tell if it's a two, a size 2, 4.
Yeah, and sometimes it's better on some of my crankbaits. I'll put a larger one on if it's not going to affect it too much. If it's not a big, you know, difference.
You know what else I do with those crankbaits while I have them out?
I'm not even going to guess. Go ahead.
I always have my bottle of red fingernail polish.
Oh, there you go.
In that tackle box. That's a tip, Mark. Turned me on to when I was just a young Jedi.
You know,
in bass
at the show, I took out one of the Head and Spooks to one of the Head and guys who was a pro, fished the Elite Series, Frank, and I asked him about that. He goes, "That's a great idea," and I'm like, "Good," because I didn't.
We haven't said it, but Mark taught me to use red fingernail polish and paint gills on everything. And I don't know why, but I just got it in my head. I caught a couple fish, and it's a confidence thing with me. I feel I have a better chance when I throw that thing out there when it's got gills painted
on
it.
Yeah, and, you know, my thought was it's showing a fish in distress and trying to get away, and its gills are flared. Now, not every crankbait I have has them on there, but every topwater I have has it on the bottom. Yeah.
I do too, man. I'll go get those bone white spooks, man.
Yep.
And I paint gills on every one of them. Like I said, I don't know if it works, but it makes me feel good, so I keep doing it. Heck, it works. That's why Mark picked it up. Mark invented that trick, by the way. If there's somebody out there using
it was an accident
polish,
too.
You spilled it. You were doing your nails, and you spilled it on your.
I had a 2-day tournament. I came home. It was in Sodus or Cayuga or somewhere. I came home, I had nail polish out, or I didn't have the nail polish out. My friends came over after I was dead tired and passed out and painted my nails. I never knew it till the next day when somebody was saying, "Why are your nails all painted?" Because you get ready in the dark, everything's in the dark, it got light, and I looked and they painted my nails on me, and some got on the lure, and then I caught fish on it, so it's like, hey. Got to keep trying it.
You tournament guys, could you imagine going to a tournament as a non-boater and drawing fingernail polish guy? You have to spend 8 hours.
Hey, that's at least your worries if you draw me.
Hey, folks, this is Taking It Outdoors. We do it each and every Sunday morning. Conversations all about hunting, fishing, camping, and more. And we have one more segment to go, and that happens next right here at 92.5 WBEE. All right, everybody, let's get it together. Welcome back to Taking It Outdoors, talking a little ice fishing today, even a little preparation practices as we inch closer and closer to spring fishing season. But first things first, man, we finally got some hard water. I heard Scott Hetsko say on his weather forecast earlier this week that we're in for about a month without a break. You know, I guess the other day it got up in the 40s. He said that was the last time for about a month. So it looks like the hard water is here to stay. Our guest in studio this morning is Mark Hertline. You remember Mark. He's a fishing instructor here in town, regionally across the state. He's also a tournament angler and a pro staffer for Shimano, G. Loomis, Power Pro, and many other great brands. Now, Mark, when I've been out ice fishing with you, it was 5-gallon bucket time. Do you have a shanty? Do you ever use them?
I have two of them.
What are the advantages and disadvantages? I mean, other than the obvious of, you know, being out of the elements. But what are the advantages? Is it enough of a game changer to warrant spending the money?
Yes. As I get older, yes. And it's basically to keep out of the wind. I mean, it can be as cold as want. It's not going to bother me. It's the wind that gets you.
Yeah.
And I do like when you're in the shanty, I keep mine pretty dark because you can see down in the hole better. I mean, it's cool watching those fish come up when you're – and then the water you're fishing is mostly crystal clear most of the time. And it's, you know, you're 20 feet down and you can see – not 20 feet, but you can see 10 feet down and those fish coming up through. It's great. And I can read my flasher better because that's all lights.
But aren't you limited? You can't cover as much water, or are you just sliding that thing all over the place?
Well, I've got a 4-man shanty that I set up that takes me about 5 minutes to take it down. But then if I'm going to be moving a lot, I've got my portable one that I can just pull right over the top of my head.
Are shanties like boats and TVs? Should you just go ahead and spend the money and get the one you want rather than the cheapest one?
Yes, just get the best one you can afford.
Yeah, I mean, because I thought about getting them before, and I was like, man, don't.
If you go on YouTube and see how these guys set up some of their shanties, they have lights in them. They bring extra batteries, everything.
No, I've seen some guys that, well, that's why I brought it up, because when I went out last weekend, I was with some guys in a shanty. You remember, it was snowing like crazy.
Yep.
And it was so brutally cold, you know. And I was like, this is great. We had the little Mr. Heater buddy cranking in there, and it was just fantastic. But I felt like, okay, what? I feel like I'm fishing in my living room after a couple of hours. But it wasn't bad.
You could stay out there longer in the weather too. The difference is, I think, you got to think more of, am I pulling it with a four-wheeler or a snowmobile, or am I dragging it by hand? If I'm dragging it by hand, I'm not going to set it up like I do if I'm going on a four-wheeler, because I'm not really worried about the weight as much.
All right, Mark, if you find the doctor gives you some news, all right, and you only got a certain amount of time to live, and you can pick three places in the whole state for the best ice fishing experience, where would you go?
Well, I love Sodus Bay. This is for me. There's other guys going to choose other places.
Because it's home and you know
you'll
catch fish.
It's home. I know the whole place.
All right. All right, the top four then.
Oneida.
What's so special about Oneida? The numbers, the multi-species?
Good perch and great walleye.
Okay. Two more.
Chemo Bay.
Yeah, now we're talking.
Because of the walleye and the perch.
Same reasons. And even muskie?
Yeah.
Northerns? I mean, they have everything.
Yep. I don't know. I want to try the river, the St. Lawrence, because I've seen my buddies. I mean, they were throwing away 10-pound walleyes during ice season because they don't keep the bigger ones. They keep the smaller ones, but I think those guys are nuts because you could stand there and look and see the tankers going by, and they're standing out in the ice fishing.
On moving river water.
Yeah. And he says you have to, you know, that river's got to move. I know the Niagara moves at 6. That one's got to be close.
Maybe like in a back bay or
they're out in the river. I saw the pictures and the video and everything.
I'd be afraid that the wake from one of those things would come crashing on top.
Yeah, I mean,
it.
They're in far enough where it's not, and there's other people out there.
Mark, when you're ice fishing, do you always start out bouncing the bottom and work your way up till you get bites? Is that a good rule of thumb?
Yeah, well, when I drop a bait down, I let it hit the bottom. I pick it up, so I start read it on my Vexlar, and then I start jigging it. You can see when they're in the middle of the water column or not. Most of the time, your fish are going to be you know, if you're fishing 20 feet, they're going to be five feet from the bottom. You don't get a lot of them coming up to the top.
When do you think you'll have your boat out? You still got it? It's inside?
Yeah, I have the Soldiers Tournament April 27th on Oneida Lake. So it'll definitely be out by then.
I've fished in March on my boat for the last four Marches.
Yeah.
At the end of March, I mean, we got snow the last day of April last year, but we still had a couple days where I was able to get out. I can't wait, man. I'm already looking forward to it. Like, I look forward to opening day of deer season. You know, I'm telling you, I'm already getting my prep underway. I got rods and reels and tackle, Plano boxes all around the living room. But you know what I started doing a couple years ago? And I may be weird, but this is just some unsolicited advice. I started going through every Plano box and wiping them out, like emptying them out entirely, wiping it down with a rag, and I found that I've been able to carry overwhelmingly, like for the most of my soft plastics will stay intact. You just get that moisture out of there. And one thing I've been doing is I've been slowly switching over to the waterproof boxes.
Yeah, I have all of them, Plano. The red?
Like all of them?
All of them.
Yeah, see, I didn't get the whole set. They're about double the price.
I think they're like $14.
Right, but yeah, so...
But one of my boxes, I have 400, you know, crankbaits. Yeah, they're $16 a piece, some of the ones I got in there.
And with that waterproof, you keep your crankbaits in good shape. That was my thing. I was buying the cheap boxes, and then I was losing half my crankbaits.
Right, but the thing is when you use a bait and you switch your crankbait, don't put it back right in the box. I've got a hanger in my boat on the inside where I can hang the lure up, and I'll leave it there. I'll leave it sit out if it's sunny out to dry. If you're putting it back wet, it's going to bring moisture into the box.
That's what those are for? I always thought those were for quick change guys.
They can be, but that's what I use them for. It was in my boat when I bought it. The other thing I did is I keep all my plastics in a plastic bag.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
And I've got the Plano boxes, just not the waterproof ones, but just the big deep ones. And I just write on there, drop shot. So when I look, I can grab my drop shot. And then they're in different storage compartments than my hard bait.
I'm going to have to let you borrow my Label Maker Junior.
Oh, thanks.
It's awesome, man. Like, I'll write 14F and print it and put it on the reel. So I know, like, later in the summer, if I'm switching things around, you know, I know on this rod, I got 14-pound fluorocarbon on there. Yeah, I'm not weird. Thank you.
I don't label my boxes. I do label the boxes, but I just put, like, drop shot.
I do, too.
DS, because I can't spell the whole thing.
I label it. Very good. I label it even though I can see through the box and see what's in it. I don't know why I do that.
Well, because if you're in a rush, you just want to grab what you want.
Mark, I want to thank you for coming in today, man. We're up against the end of another episode of Taking It Outdoors. Mark's always very generous with his time and his knowledge, and that's why he's such a great fishing instructor. Look for him around town, across the region, throughout the whole state. Mark bangs away on the tournament circuit during the summers, and if you're out there ice fishing, Mark, please be safe, man, first and foremost. And we want to thank you for coming in today.
You can go on Facebook on Mark Hurtline Fishing.
Oh, yeah, big time now.
I did my review of the Shimano DC reel on there.
I know. You know what? I'll save
it. We'll save that for...
And let people go check that out. It's actually pretty good. Mark has a Facebook page dedicated just to his fishing, and all you got to do is search for Mark Hurtline Fishing, and it'll come right up. He's the only Mark Hurtline out there. I'll be back tomorrow morning with TJ Sharp and Steve Houseman with the B Morning Coffee Club. Bob Kingsley and the Countdown is next. Have a blessed day.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.